And welcome to the Day Protection Made Easy podcast. It's the 31st of October, so happy Halloween, everyone. This week was me, Kate, and alongside with Benga and Holly for you with another episode on cookies. Last week, we touched a little bit on big fines for Meta and Shein on cookies and consent to pay, but we decided this week would be most about consent to pay and a little bit on cookie-less tracking. So what do you think about the episode, Holly and Benga?
I thought it was a really good episode. I really enjoyed it. I like talking about the new concept of a cookie-less world, you know, where we use first-party data and other similar technologies, but what those implications are for businesses that might want to implement that. Benga, what about you?
Oh, yes, it was very amazing. I think consent of pay model is legal in the UK as the ICO has given a green light, a cautious green light in January 2025, but with very strict requirements about round power imbalance, fee levels, equivalence, and privacy by design. Then the UK and the EU are diverging. You know, the UK is taking a very pragmatic approach, business-friendly to the consent of pay, while the EU is very much stricter about protecting the fundamental right. If you operate in both, you need to know how to navigate both.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was actually a very great session. I do like consent to pay topic. I think there is so much to go into in our world, data protection world, particularly around the power imbalance and what is the appropriate fee is something that actually you go very deep in this episode session about organizations that have more control or influence and the fact that we believe there are businesses that already inherently have their business as imbalance, however. So we talk about it in this episode, but we will leave it to it. I hope you enjoy and have a great weekend, everyone. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Bye. Yes, thank you.
Preferred episodes when we have more than people than just the three of us talking. So without further delay, what have you two been up to this week? Actually, Benga, was your birthday yesterday, so happy birthday.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you very
Anything
much.
Anything exciting yesterday?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, in the beginning, it looked like there was nothing happening, but about 6 p.m. then I stepped out with my friends and family. Then we went to this very nice restaurant, had some steak, food, cake, danced, took pictures, and excited for this new chapter. Yeah, thank you.
Good. Happy birthday.
Thank you very
and
much.
And welcome back. So anything exciting last week, or this week actually, about, GDPR? Have you seen anything in the news or like any clients' cases that was like hot topics to talk about?
I know a lot of housing associations are asking us about this new stairs legislation.
All right,
But yeah, so we're going to roll out some training on that soon. I know that much. But yeah, that's been what most of the queries have been about this week, I'd probably say.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think on the stairs actually is a good point that you are mentioning now. Just for all of the audience, just to let you know that we will, as Ollie mentioned, we will have potentially like training being delivered soon. We are now building a schedule and as well a face-to-face event, but I'm sure that Miles will get back to you on this shortly. But what about you, Benga? Anything exciting this week from customers of yours?
Not too much, to be honest. Just some records of processing activities, meetings, advising on data
breaches. What do you mean not that much? Ropers is exciting.
Yes, that this past week, I think it's been lots of data breaches. So I've been advising lots of customers on that, audits and stuff. Mm. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. We are already preparing ourselves for Christmas time because normally is when all the data breaches and all the work come is December, Christmas time and New Year. So we are already internally preparing ourselves, probably our mind more than anything for that. Yeah, But without further delay, let's crack on with the main topic then, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Yes. So last time on the podcast, on the part one, we touched on the emerging trends of consent and pay. That is where websites give you a choice, let us track you and show you personalized ads or pay a fee to avoid that tracking. We mentioned the at the time, Banger and Oli explore a little bit about fines against companies like Meta and Shein for cookie misuse and hint and applications. But I think, and we were having this conversation late in the beginning of this morning, we decided to go deeper on what is actually consent to pay, because this is just not just a business model, is it? It's a data protection issue and can be very tricky. So I think what exactly is consent to pay and why it is such a hot topic right now?
Yes. All right. So let me start.
Go
so
on.
Let's assume you, as a website visitor, you go to a website, and instead of the old accept all cookies buttons, you now get three choices. Instead of the normal accept all, you get three choices. One, consent to being tracked for personalized act, free access. Second choice is you pay a subscription to avoid these personalized ads. And the third choice is leave the website. This is now everywhere, news sites, social media, blogs, and it sounds reasonable on the surface. You are giving people choice, not just one, not just two, three choices. But here is what happened. So I read somewhere that a privacy activist called Mark Scrams, I think the guy who probably basically terrified every tech company in Europe, he called this model pitiful and illegal. So his organization's NOIB claims that when you offer consent or pay, you get 99% consent rate. And they are calling that fake consent. So because most people can't afford to pay, so they just click accept tracking even when they do not want to.
I definitely agree with that. I think especially with news organizations, you see a story like a headline, say something it's to do with your local area, something that might matter to you, then you go on the website consent or pay and you think, well, I really want to see it. And then how is that really freely given?
No, I
agree. It's playing on consent fatigue, where like people are already bombarded with cookie banners and now like they don't really have a choice anymore.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a friend about 2 weeks ago, and let me put this in perspective. So let's say £2.99 is literally one coffee, very cheap, right? But then the Telegraph wants another £4.99, probably £5. The Times probably wants £6. Your favorite recipe site wants under £3. Maybe your favorite football forum wants you to add or use under £2.50. If you add this all up, you could easily be spending up to £50 or £100 a month just to avoid tracking across all sites you visit. At this point, you are basically forced to consent. In a way, and this is what this guy, the company NOIB, is arguing. And here is another way to look at it. When McDonald's asks you if you want fries with that, roughly 60 to 70 people say yes. This is a genuine choice.
Yeah.
People are split. But when 99% pick the same option, then it tells you that the other option isn't viable for most people. So the question regulators are wrestling with right now is consent really free? You know, if the alternative is paying, can you genuinely walk away? Is privacy now becoming a luxurious good?
I mean, one of the ICO relies on like four kind of principles, isn't it? So power and imbalance, the reasonable fee being appropriate, and the privacy by design. I think the power for me, I think for me, the main big two topics about these four, about these four requirements is around definitely power and imbalance and what is appropriate fee. And I think actually these are connected, both of them. What my biggest issue with the power and imbalance, and spot on, both of you, I agree completely on those, is the ICO and the defines kind of a power imbalance where the organization actually has a significantly more control, kind of influence or resources than the normal user, which obviously makes the user feel compelled to consent even if they don't really want to. And again, this is reiterated by the recital 43, etc. And we know, like, straightforward situations such as public authorities, in principle, employers, in principle. And I would say, and with the Meta and LinkedIn cases in the past, that large and dominant platforms, I think these are very straightforward examples. But I feel if a service is necessary for participation in society or access to rights, such as, like Holly was saying, like education, healthcare, news, government information, and then you are offering a consent or pay. So I think probably you will fail the test regardless, because in the end of the day, it will be very hard to you to argue that users have a real choice, that is exactly where the freely given comes through. And I, as mentioned before, and I don't think ever this will be freely given. I think even I really appreciate the fact that when we are talking about the consent or pay and the fact that you are giving, well, two choices to the users, at the end of the day it is, the fact that you though goes to your point now, Benga, the fact that you are giving a price to a service is what is actually a reasonable and appropriate fee. Because in the end of the day, you are assuming that certain users are all right to pay that fee, but it's all right for me, all right for you, and for you, Ollie, probably. But for other people, probably is not. And you are making that accessible to a certain service, like, or you consent, or you pay with money, or pay with data, and that's what it is. And in the end of the day, discrimination, I would even say. So, I'm not saying, like, this is not possible. I'm not saying that it's not possible or it's not lawful, but I think the achievement of this can be very tricky. And actually, the ICO has actually good guidance on this in terms of, like, replying to our answers. And they have, in the end of the guidance, two case studies, where one of case is actually the applicability of consent or pay in the perspective, and where is not. And but again, I don't feel that actually answer any questions that we have. They don't touch the freely given that much, you know. And I think it's on purpose.
In fact, I do believe you're charging £50 per month to avoid advertisements. You're basically forcing people to consent because they can afford the alternative.
Yes.
And I don't think the ICO would actually set prices for businesses. That's not their job.
I mean, to be honest, they might make that point as well on the market authority, because they are obviously, they are not here to say what is the market position, if they are a monopoly or not.
I think another point of view as well, like in an ideal world where everybody is really, like, cookie wise and they know what it's about, that people would see these models and then click off, and then there would be less brand engagement. And I think it breeds, like less trust with the organization as well.
Very well. Then when you look at about the third factor equivalence, the free ad supported version and the paid version need to be basically the same. You can't have a premium bundle with loads of extra features and then the paid option is equivalent. You know, it needs to apply to everything, not just the ads, the other bits you. So this is an example of what not to do. Imagine if Spotify said free ads or pay for premium with no ad plus offline downloads, better audio quality, maybe unlimited skips. That is not equivalent. The paid version is clearly better beyond removing the ads. That would fail this staffing equivalence test that ICO is saying. So it's actually very dicey and tricky.
Yeah, it's just I just reading the guidance as well. That the organizations, according to the ICO guidance and obviously best practice, is kind of the onus is on them to prove that they are able to rely on this consent or pay mechanism in a lawful basis. And they are, well, they need to do their own assessment based on What type of audience do they have? If, for example, includes children, yes or no, types of vulnerable groups, if it can be accessible, yes or no, the number of people, and they are doing like their own judgment and their own assessment is up to them based on the nature of the service, real costs, real financial circumstances, etc. So potentially even probably a DPIA will be required to kind of to do this in the first instance. I'm actually just quite keen to see if, for example, last episode that when you showed like The Guardian, The Sun, like these newspapers, actually, if they carry out this assessment and one, and if they did, if it's easily accessible, like if I can, we can just see that. I'll just actually do that research now because I'm keen to see if that assessment was carried out for the newspapers and see how can they defend themselves saying, well, we are newspapers, but anyway, this is your real choice in paying 10 quid per month to, for you to access the news.
Well, that's where the difference between the ICU and the EDP comes into play.
Yeah.
The ICO is saying it's possible to do consent or pay legally. I mean, they've just set a very high bar. There is balancing. They are trying to balance the right to privacy with the right to conduct businesses. But then when you compare this with the EU, the European Data Protection Board, you know, released a guidance last year, and it is very, very much stricter than what the ICO is saying. That basically, they said for large online platforms, in most cases, cannot get valid consent if you offer a binary choice between tracking or paying. And their position revolves around personal data is not a tradable commodity. No, the fundamental right to privacy should be should not be something you have to pay for.
You know, why the ICU is saying it shouldn't be a premium service.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that for you your data protection privacy should not be something within like a choice, you know, it should be something that's your right, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, actually, well, I think I know the answer, but based on the fact that, well, the UK and the EU have clearly different perspectives on this, being as kind of a more flexible approach, I would say, and the EU being more restrict, and they actually they were the ones imposing these fines to all these entities in the past. Would you agree more, tend to agree more with the EU or with the ICO or the, I mean, the UK?
Well, the reality is consent or pay model is definitely here to stay in the UK, whether we like it or not.
No, absolutely. But approach-wise, would you, I think if it's like more a restrict way or more a flexible way, I think I would tend to say the restrict way. I think it's too dangerous to assume and to open the precedent on saying, okay, yeah, this is possible. Like there is consent. The Article 4, paragraph 11 says this is consent. Recital 43, there's what is like freely given or imbalance on power, etc. But actually, there are some limited cases where this is not just that way. Actually, there are some exemptions and consent and pay comes. I think it's dangerous and I think it opens precedents for future. That is not,
absolutely.
I think, that we will were to go.
And if any company that wants to, you know, be into this model, this consent or pay model, and if they can actually prove that they've carried out these four factors into being, you know, why not? I mean, the ICU has given them green light with important and very high caveats. So even the organizations should do this with this caveat and, you know, document these. Although they need to be very extra careful, when, because it's not really defined. We need more guidances, like you said, what is the appropriate fee and stuff like that. So, but if any organization chooses to do this, then it's fine as long as the ICU has consented and say, yes, green light, we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I think like, in the future, I don't know how true this will be. I can't, the powers that be won't tell me. But I feel like a lot more people will stop using websites. I mean, I hope that they will, that offer the consent.
Oh, we're back to old school methods. I love that, actually.
Yeah, I think they'll just stop using them. And maybe this will push us more towards cookie-less advertising, I think, maybe long term. These websites then will have like a lot less user data to market towards, and they'll see, oh, this consent or pay model isn't working, then they'll have to rely on cookieless alternatives. But
that's
we'll,
actually a very good point. But what is that, the cookieless that you are mentioning?
It's more things like first party data. So they collect the data like directly from the customer, and it can be like newsletter signups, account details, purchase history, things that you share with consent when you go onto a website. It can be done by like CRM platforms and visitor interactions, but it is hard because the scope is so limited. Like it's restricted. So for a business, they're only restricted to the interactions that you have with the website, and they can't go beyond that. So I don't know how well it will work. There's other things as well. I know that, what's it called? Plausible. An alternative to Google Analytics.
That's a real example, isn't it, of applicability of the cookies. I think it actually is a very interesting concept. The fact that there are actually, so the fact that we spoke about the Meta and Machine and so many other organizations that are being fined because they are struggling in being compliant with cookies and the use of cookies, etc. And then we have these alternative technologies to cookies that obviously may be under PECA and will be as a similar technologies. And obviously, if they still collect data that identify people, will be under the UK GDPR as well. But I think are quite interesting because they are based on like fingerprinting and basing and all like first party data, AI, magnet. I think they are actually very interesting.
I do like it because it is more user privacy based. That's a big pro for me, but it does come with a lot of cons, like coming up with all the different technologies where you don't use cookies and you're still trying to track data. It can be like expensive for organizations, especially smaller businesses. And a lot of them will be resistant to change as well.
What I
feel
I
like
feel
cookies
about,
have been around for so long, and that's
what I feel
the
about
way
is,
we do things now.
What I feel about the alternative is, you know, the alternative to cookies, but it is not completely wholeheartedly perfect. And I feel one needs to use multiple solutions together to get to that point. There's no single silver bullet that addresses this whole thing. But then again, technology exists. So the winners in this new landscape, this new cookieless alternative, will be organizations that probably build very strong first party data strategies. You know, that invest in customer relationship, which is very key, that probably diversify beyond the cookie, just, you know, cookie based tracking and all. And more importantly, I think organizations that actually do test these alternatives before you know they even go into play would win with this cookieless alternative.
Absolutely. I was reading some thoughts, like other people thoughts about the cookieless and what this means in practice, and I realized that I thought well, probably this is like the mistake of what we are working in this environment for too long, and sometimes things are just so straightforward for us and we completely forget there are people that obviously are not in our world daily basis and dealing with this. But I thought there was such a misconception of what is actually cookieless, and cookieless just means that they are not just using like cookies, but does not mean that they are do not collect data, because they are different types of data. Meaning again that they are still as well under the legislation of Black Packers and the UK GDPR is obviously different in different remits, but they are still under this legislation. And I think the point that you made, Ollie, about being more privacy friendly, absolutely, I agree with that. In a sense, from what we know and how these data look like, but I feel that as well that organizations, even they try 100%, I raise that point, but unfortunately this will not be cost effective, because they are this probably will be such an amount of effort, like money wise
resources
and I think in itself is an interesting point, because it does not mean that organizations don't want to use or rely on these alternative mechanisms. It's because the way that well, and the legislation is built and the resources are built, is for organizations in principle to rely on cookies. And this is, well, something that's unfortunately for small organizations, it's not something that is still available. It's like potentially for bigger ones still. So again, more data being generated here. Nothing is free. Our data is still being sold by third parties. I opened like the Microsoft web page on the cookie part, and I was shocked with the amount of third parties that are the cookies that Microsoft is involved with. Is sometimes we don't have any idea. We thought, okay, we just want to go to that website just to see that thing, and that's it. And the amount of data that will generate and be shared with other third parties is massively.
Yeah, I think with the ICO's recent kind of crackdown on cookie compliance as well, it is kind of going back to Benga's point on maybe trying to test it. It's worth thinking about cookieless advertising, even though it might not be, you know, easy to do for you as an organization. It is just worth thinking about, because then there's just less risk of, you know, being caught out by the ICO. You know, you could see if it works for you. It's worth trying, I think.
I agree.
Indeed, yes. So if you are considering first the concept of pay, you know, model, I think the first step is you need to do a proper DPIA before anything else. You have to document your assessment, as this is very non-negotiable. Second stage is to assess against the ICO four factors, honestly and genuinely. The first one being power imbalance. Can users realistically walk away? Consider the appropriate fee. Is it genuinely affordable? Then equivalence, is the service truly the same with or without advertisement? Mm-hmm. Then the fourth is privacy by design. Are you making it easy to refuse? So the first is DPIA, you know, assess those four factors. Then probably step three, I would advise consider contextual advertisement that don't track, you know, advertisements perhaps. This could be like a more genuine choices to offer than without compromising compliance. I thought that number four is to monitor the behavior of people. You know, how many people are actually paying versus consenting? Are they really paying for this? You know, when you probably increase the amount to like £10, are 10,000 people actually paying this amount? Mm-hmm. Or are they consenting? I feel if 99% of the people are consenting and only 1% is paying, then there might be a problem.
Yeah, I think building on that, I think a part of the risk assessment as well is who are the people that you're advertising to?
Yeah.
What is the most consistent like demographic of people that visit your website? If you're for children or maybe elderly people are particularly interested, yeah. I think there should be tighter restrictions on that somehow, that you can't use a consent or pay model if it's mostly children or if it's mostly elderly people who may not really understand the concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they think, oh, I need to pay for my newspaper now, or I can just click this button, and they don't really understand what they're doing, like what cookies they're allowing onto the device. So I think if it was possible in an ideal world, it would be good to restrict that.
No, very absolutely. Well. I think as well, in like in the assessment, as both of you were saying, I again raising the point that personally I feel like on the four pillars principles that ICO relies on, I think again the power imbalance and the reasonable fee are the most the hardest, not to argue, to argue, but where you should rely on most, because I think everything will be on that and those specific elements. The fact that points such as the nature of your business, even the market position. I understand that obviously the ICO is not where you should go for that to assess that, but it's important for you to understand in the market position, because I think it's very straightforward for us to assume that, well, Meta, like Microsoft's and Google's are, they have their own market position, very, very well known in the world. Yeah. And again, as well, how essential is your service and how much users rely on you as a service. And if you come to a conclusion where, oops, okay, potentially there is an imbalance in here, or there are some questions, it's not straightforward, that is no imbalance, you need to provide alternative ways. You need to provide alternative ways to assess that service. Like, I don't know, you need to consider that. You need to consider that. It's
I
very,
definitely agree. Yeah.
It's very important, because I'm not saying that it's not possible. Again, it's just a matter of assessing and bearing in mind the other people's rights and what you are aiming to in this here. Yeah.
I'll also add that you should also document everything, because the ICO is definitely watching. I mean, be ready to justify your model with the ICO. So you have to document and keep records of these documentations. And if you are
everything documented, proof.
And if you are preparing for cookieless, you know, you should audit your cookie usage. You know what you're tracking and why you're actually tracking. Are these necessary? You know, is all of this compliance? Then I think, like Oli mentioned, you should build your first party data collection strategies, you know, and focus on your own relationship more, you know, more than any other thing. Then test it, you know, start with the solution. Don't rely on 100% third party, you know, that can be blocked at any time. So you have to test whether it works or not.
And don't be afraid to risk. I think the test is important. It's something that should be considered. Yeah. I appreciate that, obviously, costs are associated with this, and potentially awareness of the individuals that help you with this type of cookies and with your IT team and the technical personnel. But don't be afraid to risk. This is definitely on a requirement legislation's point of view, potentially will be much, very easier for you to achieve.
Yes.
So definitely, as Benga and Oli made the point, please test it. And if you are thinking about it, please let us know. We would absolutely love to know if it's something that you are considering internally already, or if because of this podcast episode, you will be potentially making the point to your board meeting or anyone internally. Just please drop us a message. We'd love to hear from you. And I think probably we will leave it to this and potentially a part three if you want to go deeper on the other principles on the consent to pay, the cookie list.
I think there could be more to talk about the cookie list, like what kind of controls you can use. And
absolutely. That could I think be something. Even for like a special guest to know for that, like on a technical perspective, I would love that. Well, guys, thank you so much, both of you, for joining the podcast this week.
You.
All of you that were here with us, thank you so much. Happy Friday. Happy Halloween. And we speak next week. Thank you.
Happy Halloween. Bye.
Bye.
It's very nice.